GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hilrich Tyler Show. George on vacation in FLA. Reconnecting with Kara Sachs of Yes on One ahead of next Tuesday's primary balloting for Democrats and Republicans that will take part in their respective party primaries. Kara, can you hear us okay on the PDQ or telephone line this morning?
I can. Thanks for having me.
Terrific. I need to ask you for, this is part of our doing our homework before we go and vote, because we followed a recent debate that you were in with, I believe, a Dr. Blaisdell, I think. And there was some discussion about exemption rate versus vaccination rate. And a couple of listeners sent us a note because they confessed that they were a bit confused. All of this goes to question one and the people's veto attempt of a bill passed by the legislature, which strips away a parent's rights to see their child exempt from certain immunizations based on philosophical or religious reasons. I'm going to ask, I've only had one cup of coffee this morning, Kara, and it's been a long morning already, but I'm trying to wrap my mind around this discussion of exemption rate versus vaccination rate, how it comes up in debate, and what we need to wrap our mind around when we go and make an informed vote.
Yes. So I very much appreciate the opportunity to clarify. It is confusing. I did want to note that anyone who's interested can go right to our website, which is rejectbigpharma.com. And there's a data section that has facts and stats. It has all of the graphs and charts that we've pulled right from the main CDC webpage. So if anyone is actually interested in really digging into that, they can head over there because it's something that the numbers are thrown out in a very misleading way and cherry-picked to fit the argument being made by one side. So the vaccination rate is really a better number to look at if you're referring to things like herd immunity and wanting to know where a particular cohort or age of students is. The exemption rate is much less clear. And as my opponent mentioned, we were on the debate together, and then we were on main calling on Tuesday. And she also acknowledged that we don't really know what the exemption rate is. The exemption rate can be students who are literally missing one dose of one vaccine. It can be students who are completely unvaccinated, and it can be students who are missing records. But the vaccination rate encompasses all students who have been vaccinated for that particular illness that's being measured. So in our case in Maine, we have really excellent school nurses, and we have great reporting. So in our state, the numbers always add to 100%. Sometimes they are actually over 100%, as is in this case. In many other states, you know, the number might only add up to 90% because there's so many numbers missing. So we know, you know, the other side, the opposition in this case, has been referring to, oh, the rates were drastically declining in Maine for vaccination, and we had to intervene and do this. And so we argue that's not the case. Right on our website, and I'm looking at this chart right now, you can look for kindergarten school vaccination rate. You know, we know those numbers don't decline because the children are already vaccinated. It starts in 2014, 2015, and you can look at the last 5 years of data. And we go, not to bore people with the numbers, but in 14, 15, that was an average 94.7%. Then we went to 95.7, 96, 95.3, and then in this last school year, 94.7% again. So the rates are really varying, you know, an average of about 1% over years. And that just depends on that age of children. The exemption rate for the kindergarten students last year was 4.65%. So we know that, you know, if the rates are declining, it's variable with 1%. And that also the CDC stopped reporting first grade statistics. And what we see when you look at that chart on our website is that the average vaccination rate always jumps by at least a full percent from kindergarten to first grade. And the reason for that is there are many boosters that children receive between 4 and 6 years of age because the efficacy of vaccines wears off over time. And so between 4 and 6, children receive boosters, and many parents choose to wait to the outer edge until the age of 6 to do that. And so those children are considered exempt in kindergarten because they are not fully vaccinated. And so the CDC last year stopped measuring the first grade numbers, and they also changed the data that they were measuring for older students, which we feel is strongly contributing to that higher exemption rate that our opposition group is using to force their argument. I would also note, Rick, that the CDC did not release this new data that showed any decline until after this bill was written, after this bill was printed, after this bill was heard during the public hearing. The state data usually comes out in June, and the data came out in April from the Maine CDC, very curiously, about 2 days before the work session on the bill. So the conclusions were already drawn that the rates were dropping before anyone had any evidence to back that claim up.
Let me jump in and ask here, because you would be the person to ask of this, and maybe you asked the question. Did you or did someone with the Yes on One campaign make that inquiry of the CDC or lawmakers who are making these decisions? Why did you not wait for, or why did you not, what was the response?
We, you know, the Maine CDC was woefully unable to answer most of the questions as it pertained to the scope or evidence for this bill. They just pointed out declining rates. But again, you know, in recent years, anyone who has a middle schooler knows another dose of meningitis was added, another dose of the pertussis vaccine was added. And so, you know, children at that age, it was a brand new requirement. They were not fully up to date, which is not, it's not an example of, you know, parents choosing to opt out at a higher rate. It just means people probably don't even know about that requirement. And so, you know, there was a lot of cherry picking data that happened to try to make the data fit the conclusion and the political agenda involved here, which is to remove parents' rights and patients' rights to make their own medical decisions.
So let me see if I can write the headline around this the way that I want to be able to understand this, because I needed an easily consumable forms like the size of a chicken nugget here. There were claims that rates, exemption rate, there were claim rates were going down, so something had to be done. But can we trust that rates were going down when the CDC was not issuing data from 2018, 2019 about seventh graders and first graders?
Correct. The seventh grade data is there, but it's for different measures. They don't measure MMR vaccine, which is, you know, the measles vaccine that everyone is worried about, particularly last year when the bill was written. They didn't even measure for MMR in seventh graders. So they changed the actual vaccines that they were measuring, and they stopped measuring that first grade data for reasons that, you know, don't make sense to me, because it's a very good indicator of what's happening if you're actually concerned about vaccine coverage.
Let me ask you a question. Talking with Kara Sachs, Yes on One, and trying to wrap our mind around what we heard in a recent debate of vaccination rate versus exemption rate, because it sounds like there's a bit of spin in trying to give people a chance to wrap their mind around it. This person writes to us, sounds like between 4 to 5%. So there are too many unvaccinated that could put my child at risk. Kara, let me ask you to respond. You've responded to similar questions about that before.
Yep.
If someone claims that, well, these numbers are telling me, whether it's vaccination or exemption, that there are 4 to 5% that are unvaccinated and my child could be at risk.
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's one we hear very often. So I'll thank the listener for sending that in. So what we know is between, you know, in that 4 to 5% range of exemptions, we don't know anything about those children or their vaccine coverage. So that 4 to 5% includes parents, you know, who forget to send in their vaccination data. They may be truly fully vaccinated. They might also be parents who are missing, have children missing one vaccine. So the child might have had a reaction, or a sibling had a really negative reaction, like a really violent seizure after vaccination, and so they decide not to give that one vaccine, but the child is vaccinated for everything else. So say that child is missing only the chickenpox vaccine. And it also includes children who are missing, as I said, those boosters. So they've had maybe 3 rounds of every vaccine previously and just not the most recent. So we don't really know, you know, what that number looks like. To give a point of reference, in 2000, we were in the 80th percentile of vaccination coverage, and we were not hearing on the news, you know, this information about rates. So our rates have declined, have increased, excuse me, really drastically since then. And the other piece that people don't, you know, it's not being really fully understood because of the way it's being portrayed in the media and the way our opponents are misleading parents into pushing their agenda, is that the illnesses that we're hearing about, measles and pertussis, are the top two. Those are occurring in Maine most often in children who are vaccinated for the disease. So being concerned about that 4 to 5% when we are at a herd immunity threshold that's argued by the opposition, 80% of children and adults who have pertussis in Maine, as measured by the Maine CDC, are fully vaccinated for pertussis. So you're more likely for your child to get pertussis from another child in their class who is fully vaccinated than you are from an unvaccinated child. And with measles, we had one case of measles in Maine diagnosed in a Mainer in decades. And that child was vaccinated for measles. They were attending school before the diagnosis was confirmed, and no other child got the disease. So we really argue that this fear of children who might be missing only one dose of one vaccine is really unfounded. The Maine CDC has not been able to point to those children as a problem. And, you know, the rates are strong and not declining.
We had a terrific conversation. It didn't matter which side of the issue you were on. We had an interesting and a terrific conversation with a woman named, I believe it was Angie Kenny. I think Angie Kenny was on last week. And I'm guessing you know who Angie Kenny is.
I do. And I caught that interview. It was great that you were able to have her on.
Because we wanted to find someone who was an example of who had a child who was... What is the term? Immunization? Vaccination injured? Vaccine injured. One thing that she mentioned to us, and I wanted to see if I could get confirmation from you on this, is that when she went to her pediatrician after her daughter was vaccine injured, and then the pediatrician went and looked at the immunization, the shot, on the side of the shot, if I'm understanding this correctly, and I'm looking to you for confirmation on this, it says may cause blank. I want to say it was not apraxia. Forgive me for not knowing
ataxia.
This.
Cerebellar ataxia.
Okay. Yep.
Which is a destruction, I believe, of the covering of the nerve in the body.
So we have these immunizations, these shots that are sitting in cupboards that are then opened and then injected into children. But on the side of these, it says may cause blank. Am I understanding it correctly? So, that is one listener said that's like reading may cause cancer on the side of a cigarette. Their words, not mine, may cause cancer on the side of a package of cigarettes.
Yes. Yeah. So. Those of us, you know, most of us have probably picked up a prescription at some point in our lives, and stapled to the outside of the bag is a list of known side effects that can occur as a result of the medication. And so we always make the choice as adults, with our doctor, is the problem significant enough for you to take the medication? Do the risks outweigh the benefits? You know, do the benefits outweigh the risks? And the same is true with vaccines. And there is something called a vaccine insert, which is essentially that list of known side effects. And you can ask to see it. Many physicians themselves have never read them. They are oftentimes like 30 pages long, and they list all of the known side effects that have occurred either in safety trials or since then for the vaccine.
Okay, forgive me for jumping in. Hang on a second, because this was the other analogy that someone shared, because we only got a minute here. We watch television, and it's a 60-second commercial that talks about what the medication can do for you. And 30 seconds of that ad is spent because they have to tell you what the side effects may be.
Exactly.
But am I understanding that a pediatrician who is injecting a child with a vaccination is not required to do that same level of disclosure to you about what this might cause, as is the case with what happened with Angie Kenny?
I don't know specifically what is required of pediatricians to do. I know just from my own experience and from many parents that parents are often just told, you know, you're told this is what they're due for today. Great, we'll see you at the next appointment. You know, in the medical community, you know, there's this misnomer that vaccines are safe and effective and that there's no risk associated with them. And if you ask to look at that vaccine insert yourself, you'll know that's not the case. And again, we're not arguing, you know, vaccines are an important part of public health. We're not arguing that, you know, the risks always outweigh the benefits. We're just arguing that there are risks like any medical intervention, and that should always be decided between the parent or the adult and the doctor.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.